This is the KVNF Regional Newscast for Friday, January 1st, 2021. I'm Gavin Dahl with headlines. Governor Jared Polis surprised local public health officials on social media Wednesday night, announcing he has asked the CDPHE to move counties now labeled as red on the state's coronavirus dial back to orange status effective Monday. This will allow indoor restaurant dining to resume at 25% of normal capacity and loosen restrictions on gyms and offices. The unexpected move comes as COVID numbers are back on the rise in Colorado. A Cold War leftover in Grand Junction will continue to operate under a provision of the COVID-19 bill signed by President Trump last weekend. The uranium mill tailings disposal site can now remain open until 2032, according to the Grand Junction Sentinel. The 94-acre site, which accepts low-level radioactive waste, sits 18 miles southeast of Grand Junction. The uranium mill itself was located at the current site of Las Colonias Park and operated during the 50s and 60s. It was cleaned up by the Department of Energy in 1994. However, during the mill's operation, Grand Junction residents used more than 2 million tons of the Sandy Mill tailings to construct building foundations, sand traps, sidewalks, roadways, and more, not realizing that the tailings were radioactive and potentially harmful. The Department of Energy eventually cleaned up more than 4,000 properties in Mesa County that contained tailings, and cleanup continues as even more are discovered and removed. Without the disposal site, tailings would have to be hauled to a commercial dump west of Salt Lake City at a cost of $60,000 per load. The U.S. Supreme Court will soon review its first case on tribal law enforcement jurisdiction since Amy Coney Barrett joined the court. The Mountain West News Bureau's Savannah Marr explains the stakes.
The case stems from a 2016 traffic stop on the Crow Reservation in Montana. The driver was non-native. Because of that, his lawyers argue that a tribal police officer had no authority to search his truck or to detain him after finding meth, several guns, and a small child in the back seat. Judges on the Ninth Circuit Court agreed with the man's lawyers, which Joel Williams says is disturbing.
Gosh, that really poses a very serious public safety issue.
Williams is an attorney with the Native American Rights Fund, a nonprofit that provides legal services for tribes. He says tribal officers are already limited in their ability to police potentially dangerous non-Native offenders.
They're the first responders. They're the only ones out there responding to these kinds of calls in these very, very remote areas.
However, the Ninth Circuit ruling said it needs to be obvious from the first interaction that a non-Native person is committing a crime before a tribal officer can intervene. Both sides are expected to file briefs with the court sometime in January. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Savannah Marr.
Farmers are looking for innovative ways to feed an ever-growing population with shrinking supplies of land and water. KUER's David Fox in Salt Lake City has the story of a vertical farming system that's aiming to disrupt how animals and eventually humans are fed.
Picture a warehouse, but instead of shelves full of boxes, imagine grass growing and floor-to-ceiling stacks of trays. And that's a pretty good picture of the Olympus Tower farm system from Grove Technologies. Company president Steve Lindsley says the system can produce 5,000 to 6,000 pounds of animal feed every day, using only 5% of the water of a conventional field, all year round.
Today we're supposed to get some snow, and the animals will be eating as if it was early June out on a pasture.
Grove is a Utah-based company, and the first farm to install their system is the state's biggest dairy operation, the family-owned Bateman's Mesita Farm. Co-owner Brad Bateman says they like producing their own feed, but the decision to invest in the system was a practical one.
We're a business, and so it has to make sense from the financial end.
Bateman says there have been a few kinks to work out with the new technology, but on the whole, he says the system's feeding a lot of cows, and the family is happy with the early results. David Fox, KUER News.
Colorado families with children are struggling to meet their basic needs during the COVID pandemic, according to a new NEE Casey Foundation report. Eric Galatis has more.
Sarah Hughes with the Colorado Children's Campaign says the pandemic has exposed big holes in Colorado's safety net programs, where families of color more at risk of getting sick and dying from COVID-19 have also been disproportionately experiencing food and housing insecurity for years.
Before the pandemic hit, we still had 150,000 Colorado children who were living in poverty. And so for those families, these are not new problems, but they may have seen those problems get even worse.
Nearly one in eight families say they worry about paying next month's rent or mortgage, and 11% say they don't know where their next meal will come from. Leslie Bossier with the Casey Foundation says families are struggling to manage school, work, and mental health. 20% report experiencing signs of depression since the pandemic's onset.
All children in good times and in bad should have their basic needs met. Children should not be hungry. They should have safe, secure housing. They should have access to quality education. Parents should have access to childcare so that they can work to support those families.
Hughes says true recovery is going to take decisive policy action by state and federal elected officials to focus on kids and families.
Families really can't overcome these on their own. They can't do it by working harder, by being more frugal. No amount of individual resourcefulness is going to change the situation we all find ourselves in right now.
The report's recommendations include prioritizing racial equity in recovery efforts, strengthening the Affordable Care Act, and expanding access to unemployment insurance. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
After voters approved a measure to allow marijuana shops in Paonia, the Trustees Committee on Governmental Affairs and Public Safety has been grappling with the details, including where the revenue will go, where retail can set up shop, and where the pot will be grown. Kate Redmond spoke with Trustee Mick Johnson.
Retail and medicinal marijuana was not only approved in Paonia, but also in Norwood, in Cedar Edge, and multiple municipalities in our area. How is what we're doing in Paonia concurrent with what's happening in other towns?
Municipalities see really the need for a new source of revenue to tackle infrastructure challenges. It's a good way to raise income, to raise revenue.
And the revenue will come in the form of licenses and also taxes, correct?
Licenses, taxes, and transaction fees. Which those funds is going to go to street repair, sidewalk repair, the infrastructure for those items.
And will Paonia have the stipulation that the marijuana has to be grown locally?
Actually, no, there will not be, because currently Delta County does not allow that. You know, with so many locals growing it, it just seems like it would really be common sense to allow that. That's why we will push to see that that gets done.
Cannabis shops will only be allowed in C1 and C2 commercially zoned areas and potentially I1 and I2 industrial zones, but not in residential areas. Also, Paonia will observe 1,000-foot setbacks from any school or childcare facility. That does it for the KVNF Regional Newscast. I'm Gavin Dahl. Thanks for listening, and Happy New Year.